Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
All right, people, our next guest. Let's put it this way. If Las Vegas had a sound, this is what it would sound like. That's my opinion. We have from the band Count 77, Mr. Stoney Curtis and Mr. John Zito. How are you guys?
Great. Doing awesome. Thanks for having me back on the show again, and now having Zito with you too. So yeah, this is great. Thanks.
Good. I'm glad you're here. So would you agree with that, that this was, you guys are the sound of Vegas?
I think we are right now. Between our trios, because John and I both have power trios also, and the Count band.
Yeah.
I think as far as rock and blues, I think that's pretty close, pretty fair.
Yeah, but I mean, and when,
there's definitely some amazing bands here and stuff like that. But I think right now, you know, it's hard to deny that, we're doing pretty good representing Las Vegas right now.
And when you think about what Vegas is, a party town, this is party music.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, good rock and roll and blues rock, that kind of stuff, you know, rowdy rock and roll,
yeah,
never goes out of style.
Absolutely. And so it's, you know, you got a new record. It's called Soul Transfusion, which is a great title. I like that title a lot. And we're going to get into that. But this record, I've really immersed myself in this record. I really kind of just digested it. And it is great. And it's the... when you think of the last Count's record, it was really, really good. But this is sort of the mature, much more mature version, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree, because I think what happens is after the first record, we just started doing more and more gigs and traveling a lot, spending more time together, and then getting out in front of these huge crowds. I mean, so now every time we leave town, we play from anywhere from 2,000 to 20,000 people that are there to see the Count 77 band. So we just kind of developed our rapport with each other, developed our sound.
Mm-hmm.
Used to playing to these bigger crowds, and so that just brings up everything. It brings together the band tighter as a unit and mm-hmm. tighter sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're projecting more, so I think it just kind of just intensifies the music.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And focuses it. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, it just kind of, brings us together a little bit tighter, because, the band is developing kind of on the road, as most bands, I guess, would do, mm-hmm. and then you're out there playing the records. So I think that as that kind of happens, you just kind of define your sound, and it becomes more apparent. Okay, this is kind of what we're doing. This is what our sound is, and you kind of focus in on that more and push forward with that.
Yeah. Now, both of you have your trios that you do separate from Counts. But when you put, it's always interesting to me. When I think about what Keith Richards said about playing with Woody, that it's all about basket weaving. And the same thing, you can always tell the really good guitar duos, because you can't, until somebody goes for a lead break, and then even then, you can't really tell where one begins and the other ends. And that's really how it's supposed to be, with Keith, with Richards and Wood, with Whitford and Perry, even Fraley and Stanley. There was, I was actually watching a video of, Making Love, the video from Don Kirshner's rock concert. Do you remember that?
Absolutely.
So it never really stuck in my head when I first heard the record that the first solo, the intro solo into the solo section of that song, that's Stanley playing that.
And, I Want You.
On I Want You, right. Not Making Love, on I Want You, right.
I'm a huge Kiss fan, so I mean a lot of this, the way, like how you say, kind of basket weaving. I mean, I it's totally kind of taken from that kind of mindset of Paul Stanley and H. Fraley, because I mean, they're playing the same thing, but only different. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
They both kind of, you know, one guy's high, one guy's low. One guy might just be playing like little double stop things, and the other guy's playing a power chord. So,
right.
I mean, they had a great way. And I think they're very underrated in that way. I mean, I think a lot of people think, you know, the Judas Priest guys, you know, KK and Glenn Tipton.
Yeah.
Thin Lizzy and stuff like that. You know, when you think of the great guitar duos, you know, you think of them. But yeah, Paul Stanley and Ace Frehley had definitely had a rapport with each other. The way they kind of tied the guitars together.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, really good counterpoint. Really good. And it's funny you say one was high and one was low. If it was Frehley, he was definitely high.
Enough, I think he was usually the one that went high. So, yeah, I mean, John and I, you know, do the same thing. I mean, we both kind of have our own sound, and when, especially when we play live, that sound just kind of seems to mesh together. Where he's like, his tone is a little bit more on the lower end, a little bit muddier. And mine's a little bit on the brighter end and sharper, and then they just kind of come together, and it just sounds huge, like a freight train. So
absolutely. I couldn't put it better myself. Yeah.
I totally agree with that. That's, you know, it's funny because actually in my notes when I was listening to the track Hard Rock Band, I was like, man, that's a wall of sound right there.
Yeah, big guitars and. You know, by design, you know, we sit there and we think about, we don't want every song to sound the same. I always say this, for maybe it's a good idea, maybe it's a bad idea, to where, you know, I don't want every song to sound exactly the same, you know, like where it's like the same Les Paul and the same Marshall, to where, you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I wanted to, like, you know, okay, on this song, like Hard Rock Band, I mean, that's, obviously, those are Les Pauls and Marshalls and stuff like that.
Obviously.
But then, like, some other songs, it's like, you know, like Sin City Boogeyman or something like that. It's like, you know, let's drive a telly up the middle on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it's kind of got more of that twang sound, so it doesn't sound just like this song. You know, and on this song, let's use a Supro instead of the Marshall, so it just kind of gives you that kind of tone, so that every song stays within the parameter of what we're doing with the 70s kind of rock,
right.
But not every song sounds exactly like the other song.
Right. No, totally. I get that for sure. So when you guys sit down, when a song's been written and you guys sit down to work on the parts, does it change up all the time, or do you guys have a bit of a formula?
As we start to play them more, you know, they kind of start to develop a little bit more, and every guy comes in and starts to kind of put their own stamp on it.
Right.
You know, I'll play these rhythm tracks, and then Zito comes in and puts, like, you know, he has a national, and you know, puts a slide in there, and that's a whole nother vibe underneath all of it. So every guy kind of comes in and puts their own sound on it and their own vibe, then it naturally just becomes Count 77.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, you know, Mike Varney and I sitting here going, okay, oh, let's do this, and then we'll go here, and then we'll do this. Okay, cool. Sounds great. Now we got the skeletons. Now let's bring in the guys and have them put their vibe on it and their stamp on it, and it develops to a Count 77 song.
Right. Well, that's cool. And when you're recording, do you assign somebody to a specific channel, you know, side of the mix, so geeks like me can figure out who's playing what?
Not usually. Sometimes we'll spread them out a little bit, but for the most part, it just kind of depends on how it sounds best in the mix.
Yeah, yeah. It's I tell you, it's a great record. Did Mike produce this record?
Mike Ronnie and I have now done 7 records together. This is our 7th record.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
you know, Mike is just, you know, for two guys. I mean, we just kind of have a great rapport with each other. Like, we know, we write songs quickly. You know, we kind of know exactly what we're going for and the vibe that we're going for. Mm-hmm. And he just has a way of tapping into, you know, he's a great producer. He just knows the strengths of, you know, what we want to do and what we want to sound like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's gonna take it to the next level. You know, and I think what happened with this record is, you know, just that relationship is developing and getting stronger and more cohesive.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I think I said to you last time we talked, he's got golden ears. He really knows how to hear. He knows how to listen.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's really important. So let's get into this record, man. I want to talk a little bit about certain tracks, and I have some questions. In my estimation, you have two anthems on this record. All right. So it's Summer of 77, which is also there's a video for. Folks, if you go to guitarradioshow.com, you can find all the links to get to Count 77. You can also go to count77.com and see the video there. But I'll also have a link to the video in the show notes at guitarradioshow.com. So yeah, Summer of 77, that's anthem number one right there. And the lyrics are so clever because it's, you know, I'm old enough to remember the summer of 77.
Yeah, right.
So I remember what that was like. You know, that was the year of Love Gun.
Yeah, right. It was the year of Love Gun, right? That was my first concert.
That was your first concert? Really? That's cool.
LA Forum, yeah, 1977, kid.
Oh, LA Forum, and that's where they recorded Alive, too.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the theater was there when I was there, yeah.
So you're on that. Your screams are on there.
Your screams are on there, exactly. That's actually Tito screaming.
That's him.
But yeah, you know, and I think the great thing about that song, too, is that, you know, the music, the way it's presented, it's happy. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like, how do you listen to that song? It's like to me, there's one song by Elton John, "Honky Get Back, Honky Cat."
Yeah,
it's that song. It's like you can't listen to that song and not be in a good mood.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It just brings a happiness over me. And when I listen to the Summer of 77, the music, it's just upbeat. It has like a happy tone to it.
Yep.
And like you said, the lyrics tell a story, and it doesn't matter if it was the summer of 77 or 87 or 97 or 2007, you can still relate to it. You know what I mean? I mean, everybody's been a teenager, been 17 years old or whatever, in their car, you know, drinking beer that they probably shouldn't be drinking. You got your girl with you. I mean, whatever it is, I mean, you can relate to it in any era of time and go, man, yeah. Man, I do remember when I was a kid, man. That was so much fun, man. You know, your responsibilities are lower. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know what I mean? The pressure is lower. You're just out there enjoying being a kid and enjoying life.
It was carefree. It was totally carefree. Yeah, man.
Absolutely. I think a lot of the songs on the record, they all tell a story that you know, if you're a teenager or, you know, you're 100. I mean, you can relate to it and you understand it. You get it. You can picture it in your mind.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. I mean, my biggest concern was where I was going to get another $5.99 to buy another record.
Right. Remember when albums were $5.99? Just outright vinyl was something. That's all. It's 77. That's all right. They're about $6.
Yeah, $5.99. You know, and in the discount bin, you could get, you know, Jimmy Page playing with Sonny Boy Williamson for $3.99.
Yeah, right. Right. The super saver.
Right. The super saver. The cutout bin.
Right. So, in fact, in 1977, I think I rode my bicycle up to this place called Hegwis Records in the Chicago area, and got Love Gun. And I remember picking up the album, and then maybe this is where I started writing songs in my head, because I knew nothing of what this album sounded like. I didn't know any of the songs. I just looked at the names of the songs on the back, and I was making up the song in my head about riding my bike home with this album.
going to be when I finally get on how the song already sounds. Like, I'm already writing the song in my head of what Tough Gun is, Christine 16, and everything else. They obviously did a better job than I did.
Well, you know, it just took a little while longer, and then you wrote a song about the summer of 77, so.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, same thing, you know, I mean, that's pretty much, you know, just kind of Les Paul, Marshall, you know, I really like the cool slide part that Zeta puts in there that kind of, like, client keeps, you know, where the chords are kind of descending. He has the little slide part that is ascending, kind of going up, and that I think really kind of gives it that kind of melodic, you know, where it gives you that happy lift, you know.
Yeah. No, it's a killer tune and a great video, you know, simple, straight ahead performance video, you know. I mean, it's where it's at, you know. And I imagine that tune goes over really well live.
It does. I mean, it's again, everybody relates to it, and you can, you know, sometimes when we go do these shows, you know, most people get what Count 77 is now. They get that Danny is just the singer of this band. It's not a TV show guy with his band of, you know, mechanics that are playing Brown Eyed Girl. But still, some people, they don't really know what to expect, and then this band comes out and it just crushes you in the face, and you go, and you can see the expression on their face go like, what is going on here? But then when you get to like songs like Summer of 77, you see it in their face. They're listening to the lyrics and they're hearing the music, and you just see it come over them. You go, they're getting it, they understand it, they're now relating to this. And this is—it's bringing back good vibes and good memories.
Totally, absolutely. And then the second anthem to me is Hard Rock Band, because what else, you know, from Summer of 77, you heard all that great music. Hey, let's start a band. It kind of makes sense.
Zito can tell you kind of how we got together. I mean, and Hard Rock Band is really kind of, you know, an autobiographical song about the band. I mean, right. Zito will tell you how we got together a little bit.
Just friends. Yeah, I host a jam night over at Danny's Club, you know, Count's Bands here in Vegas. And I've been doing this for like 7 years, I guess, since it's opened. And Tony and I have known each other from like the blues circuit and playing. And he'd come down and play and sit in. And Danny said he sang, so he'd come up and sing. And we're just good friends, man. Just enjoyed the same kind of music what we grew up on. And like, why don't we just form a band? We've been jamming a lot anyway, you know, in our downtown, whatever time. Let's just have some fun with it. And it started off, you know, just doing like our favorite cover songs and everything. And it's grown into this monster that it is now.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people think that, again, you know, going back to what I was just saying a minute ago, you know, a lot of people think that, it, you know, Danny, like, put together this band, you know, he's got a TV show, now he wants to be a rock star. I mean, we hear that once in a while. Or you know, you know, he's, you know, paying you guys to be in the band, and we always just kind of giggle and go, no. We started out, the band started before the television show did.
Right.
You know, Danny would come up to Zito's jam, and I'd be up there, and we all kind of get on stage together.
It's like chemistry, right?
Yeah. It just kind of happened organically.
You don't play with a guitar player that often either, you and I. Right.
Right. We're poetry. Right. Yeah, so we're poetry guys. So like now we're playing together. So you're going, okay, you know, well, all right, you go this, I'll do this part, you do that part. And we just kind of started working it out. But when the band started, man, we would rehearse in a little warehouse area that was, you know, in January, and we're freezing our asses off. I mean, we had no, you know, there was no special, you know, we're in this, you know, beautiful facility and, you know, we got the, you know, everything's wonderful and we're being paid to do this. And No. This all came before the TV show. It happened organically because we liked each other and we enjoyed playing together. And you know, it's always been the same five guys, now six guys with Tommy, but it's always been the same five guys. We never, like a lot of Vegas bands do, it's like, you know, oh, I can't make it Friday. All right, well, Joe Blow is going to cover for you. And if we never do that, if one guy couldn't do a gig, we didn't do the gig. And it was always, we wanted to be like Aerosmith or like Kiss or whatever band that you go to see. That's the band. know, there's no substitutes for anything else. So the band all happened organically, and I think that's what makes the band great again as well, is that we are all the best of friends. We all enjoy each other's company. We all like playing music together, and it's always been that way. It wasn't, we weren't put together by some television show or anybody else. We came together naturally, organically. So then I think that's what makes us still a cool band, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's, and it's interesting because that's what, whether somebody knows that or not, now me knowing that, it makes me realize, wow, that's why the music sounds so honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always say to Danny, and every once in a while I'll still say it to him, but I remember one time in particular, we played here in Vegas for one of the conventions called CES, the Consumer Electronics Show.
Yeah.
The huge show in Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. Huge convention. And we played for Gibson guitars. And, you know, Patrick, the Gibson rep and stuff, I mean, he knew who we were and stuff like that. But a lot of people didn't really know. They you know, they think it's Danny and some guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I always go to Danny sometimes, right before we walk out of the stage. I say, you know what, man? This is my favorite part. He goes, he'll go, what's up? I said, because right now everybody thinks it's Danny and some guys from the shop. Right? And we're going to come out there and we're going to punch them right in the chops, and they're going to go, oh my God. So that's always my favorite part, is that part where people aren't really sure exactly what it is yet, and then you go, oh, it's not, you know, Horny Mike playing bass and rolling on the drums and whatever. It's a real rock and roll band with guys that have been playing for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And it's what's also cool about it too is it's good songs with really tasty players. That doesn't happen a lot. A lot of times you got one cat or two cats in the band that are like a focal point. But this is one of those things. It's sort of like, you know, like with Aerosmith. It was a team effort. It was always, there was one guy. To me, it was, you know, when I first time I saw Aerosmith, I was like, holy shit, Whitford is kicking ass here, you know, because everyone thought, oh, it's Perry, but, well, no, you got to think about that for a second.
And with
great songs and really tasty playing, that's great, man. You can't ask for anything more than that.
So, and again, it's like we're saying, I mean, it happened organically. And
right.
We have, you know, as friends and as musicians and as bandmates, we've grown together, mm-hmm. and we've all gotten better together and grown as a unit together. So, yeah, absolutely. It is a team effort.
For
and,
sure.
You know, and again, you know, it's like when Joe Perry left Aerosmith for a bit, you know, and Jimmy Creswell, who... I love Jimmy Creswell, insane guitar player, so on and so forth, but it was great, but it wasn't the same thing. That magic that they had as a unit was gone.
Right. Well, it can't be. It just like if you or Zito left the band, or if Barry left the band, it's not going to be the same. It's going to be different. The dynamics change.
Absolutely. And again, it goes back to, we've been together for a long time and we have grown together, so we know each other.
Right.
And everybody plays their part within the unit, it meshes together and it all comes together and it, you know.
Right. I often think it's even with drummers, like when Eric Singer left Badlands, it was a different band. Right. It was a different band after that.
Right. And our drummer, Paul DeCivio, I mean, this guy is, I mean, he just keeps getting better and better every year. And you know, he bashes the hell out of the drums, but he's also got not only is he pounding on it, but he's got a style and he's got a vibe and a tone and a sound that is part of Count 77.
Yeah. But you should still never trust anybody who hits things for a living. I'm just saying.
That's true.
So I want to talk about another track, and I'm only kidding, Paul, when you hear this.
Yeah, right.
I'm only fucking with you. So there's a track on here that's a kind of a breakaway track, but yet it still has a common thread in there. It's a track called "Evil You Could Do."
Yeah,
man, the guitar work on—I mean, first of all, the song's great. It's a great song, but within that, is this great guitar work that's happening with you guys. It's bluesy. It's got a little bit of that harmonic vibe. It's got a Santana thing going on in there.
I've heard other people mention the Santana thing.
It's got that Santana vibe, but not. And those cool B.B. King stabs on those single notes. It's such a great tune. So tell me about what's going on there. What are you guys doing?
So on that one, I play the, you know, the Beatle does the chops, right? And which kind of keeps the pulse of the song going. And then I just lay the vibrato chords underneath it.
Right.
We're kind of going for like that, Tarantino. You know, this would be like a Tarantino song, I guess. One of them David Lynch kind of vibes. You know, we were watching Twin Peaks or a Tarantino movie. We wanted this song to sound like it would be in one of those. Kind of vibes, you know? I get you, yeah. And then when we were mixing it, I don't know where I was. I think maybe I had a gig or something like that. And I came back and Mike said, I were mixing it. It's like a lot of that vibrato guitar was gone. I'm like, wait, man, where's the vibrato? Oh, you know, no. That's the whole vibe of the song is that vibrato guitar. That's what we want right there, you know.
Right.
I think if you take that out, then it's just a really cool blues song, you know.
Right.
But with you keep the vibrato guitar in there and keep its presence up, then it gives you more of that spooky vibe going with it. So.
Right. Yeah, that really kind of. No, I totally get it. That Pulp Fiction kind of. Yeah, I totally get it. Absolutely.
And same thing. I mean, everybody's playing their little part in there. And then, like you said, I mean, Zito and I are naturally blues guys. So that song is more kind of, you know, one of us could do that in our power trio, and you go, oh, okay, that's a cool Stoney Curtis song, or that's a cool John Zito song. But it became a count song.
Yeah. Very cool.
And Danny's voice is great on that. I mean, I really like his voice, you know, doing that kind of laid back, kind of bluesy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like he Danny always says too, well, we play this song live. It's in the set every night, and it's like he goes like the Monty Python thing, you know, now for something completely different. So you just got Summer 77, hard rock band, and Sons of Perdition and all this other stuff, and now there's this.
Right, but you know it's interesting because the record the sequencing of this record is like a concert.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I found that really interesting because the first time I listened to it, I was about three quarters through. It was right before Lowballer, and I'm like, wow, this is. I feel like I'm at a concert.
Yeah, it's like a little journey.
Yeah,
and that's. Yeah, you know, Mike Varney is always really good about sequencing albums. You know, he knows how to kind of put them in an order that you go. It's telling you a story. It's taking you on a ride,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of up and down roller coaster ride. And then you know, and you get to the finish, and you go, yeah, that was a great show or a great album, and I got it. You know.
Yeah. Totally. So there's another track here, Do You Feel Me? And
yeah.
This track is like, when I heard it, I was like, oh, see, now this is the type of song Kiss should be writing.
Right, this is what Kiss should be doing now.
Right now, this is what they should be doing.
They're doing it right now. Yeah, that's another one. We just added in our set. We just played it Saturday night.
That's cool. And another great vocal, too.
Yeah, another great vocal, and again, you can relate to it, you know, in one way or the other. You understand what's being said.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And that's another just kind of straightforward Les Pauls, Marshalls.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Vito and I kind of have like the if it was an AC/DC song, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's killer. But gotta be my all time favorite tune on the record, though, is definitely Lowballer.
I love Lowballer, man. That, I love the head riff. I love the where it's like it has a little scratches in there.
Yeah, yeah.
That came out really cool, and I really enjoyed that solo, you know. When we were doing the solos this time, you know, Mike was just said, you know, write a part, you know, think like Neil Sean or Michael Schenker or Ace Frehley or any of these guys, and make the guitar solo to where you go, if you don't play the guitar solo just like this, the song is not right.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you can't go and play Deuce by Kiss and then just shred all over it. I mean,
right.
You got to play that guitar solo the way it is, or it doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's the song within the song, right?
Song within the song. So Barney was very instrumental in getting us to write solos that you could sing along to. That, like you said, were a part within a part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I love the little harmony guitar part in there. It's really cool.
Yeah,
and, that's definitely top three on that album.
Yeah, it's
as well.
In my notes. I put a two guitar party.
A two guitar party. Yeah.
So,
and the one thing I love about that song too is I don't know if I did the solo, but I did like one of the rhythm tracks. I did it with my Ibanez Iceman that I've had since eighth grade graduation. That's been upgraded a little bit over the years, but that guitar sounds so good on that track, on that rhythm track. I love it. Man.
That's cool. That is so cool. Yeah, man, that's also a track, like when I heard it, I was like, wow, I could imagine when they're doing this one live, they probably stretch it out a little bit and let the guys go bonkers.
Yeah, we haven't played this one live yet. I mean, we played it live on, of course, when we recorded stuff, but this one hasn't made it into the live set yet. But yeah, I think you're right with that. That's gonna leave a lot of room to go crazy.
Yeah, you guys got to put that in the set. That's killer.
Yeah, I think that's next. That one, and I think the next couple of songs we got coming up that we're gonna put in the set. I mean, eventually, you know, I want to play them all.
Yeah.
You know. But now, now we have two albums with 11, 12 songs on it. And it's like, you know, Barry, the bass player, always says, you know, what don't you play at this point?
Yeah.
You know, the artist, right? So, that and Heebie-Jeebies. I know Paulie D wants to get into Heebie-Jeebies.
Mm-hmm.
And Lowballer. Yeah, man, it's like, again, which ones don't you play? I love them all.
Yeah, for sure. So let's walk me through the live rig. Zito, walk me through your rig, starting with the guitar.
Let's see. The guitar's just using a Gibson Les Paul. I have a National. It's an electric, kind of newer model. And a Telecaster, thin line, and a Strat.
And they're all stock?
There's bits and pieces of the National stock and the Les Paul stock. Les Paul custom. Custom, yeah, it's a custom. And the National's really nice. Curtis got me that one. He only got me that as a...
That is a nice National.
I had some Dobros and other Nationals, and they were kind of beat up, but it was time for a new one, and I had my eye on this particular guitar, and he kind of decided to flip it at a gig. So I've been using that. I take it on the road. I travel with that, and Les Paul mainly on the road. So.
Yeah.
And Marshall 800...
Mm-hmm. Straight in?
I'm sorry.
You going straight in?
No, there's a few analog effects I use. Just the MXR boost, Wafel. Got a whole lot of stuff.
So real simple, straight ahead rock and roll.
But yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, with both of our bands, we don't use a lot of effects or pedals and stuff like that. I'm always, for me anyway, I'm always marveled at, you know, these guys. It's like, why did I buy a $4,000 head and I'm going to put a $79 pedal in front of it? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
It doesn't.
You know what I'm saying? It's like I got this Marshall Jubilee, or I got this the head that I've been using a lot lately is the Bogner Helios, which is one of their newer heads, and it's a beast. But you know, I mean, it was not cheap. You know, I mean, I had to save a lot of pennies for a long time to get this thing. So the last thing I'm going to do is put some, you know, cheap pedal in front of it and change the sound of what I just paid all this money for.
Right. Well, yeah, that's why you got to use a $150 pedal.
$150 pedal.
Or $200 pedal.
But, you know, and Vito and I are both the same in this. It's like, I like the sound of a Marshall 800. That's why I have it. You know, I like the sound of this thunder. That's why I have it. So I try to keep it, and we're both like this, we try to keep that sound as pure as possible, where it sounds like what it is.
Right.
And especially like for like 70s music, you know, they didn't have all of this stuff back then.
No.
Digital bat and these pods and all that stuff. I you know, they had Marshalls, and they had maybe, you know, a couple little different effect pedals. I mean, you know, like maybe a little delay or this, that, or the other, but it was none of this elaborate stuff, you know.
Right.
It was more natural.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the homepage at count77.com, and I see Marshalls, I see Ampegs.
That's right. And Barry, the bass player, that website is being redone, by the way, but those pictures are from like 2013 or something, but nothing's changed. I mean, we still use Marshall, Bogner, Ampeg, Gibson, Fender, right? Yeah, no, there's no funny business. I mean, it's pure and natural, like it was. I mean, we don't go too crazy. I mean, it's pretty much raw and genuine.
Well, that's why it sounds the way it sounds.
That's why it sounds the way it sounds, right? And Barry, you know, SVT, you know. I mean,
yeah. Oh.
They're playing SVT.
Yeah, I still have yet to hear anything that, you know, for this kind of music, I have yet to hear anything that sounds that good.
Yeah. I did this thing a couple of months ago that Randy Rhodes remembered. Are you familiar with this at all?
I am, yeah.
I mean, it's a great, so I was asked to be a part of it a couple of months ago, and it was an honor and a thrill for me to be a part of this thing with these guys. And but, you know, they had a couple of different rigs, you know, and it was like, Brian Tichy had his rig, which was basically an 800 and a 412 cabinet and a MXR Distortion Plus, you know, and I think I added maybe a flanger or something on there. And then, you know, some guys had, like, you know, the Line 6 this or the whatever is that, digital stuff that gave you the quote-unquote Randy Rhodes sound. And, you know, when I went there for sound check and stuff, and they go, well, you know, whatever rig you want to play, I'm like, hey, in 1979, Randy Rhodes didn't have a Line 6 this or that. He had a Marshall, and he had a Distortion Plus. So I'm going to go with this rig right here.
Uh-huh.
And same thing, you know. So it's just like keep it pure, keep it, you know, close to the natural sound of everything that it can be.
Right. So you'd say your live rig is pretty similar to Zito's.
Travel on the road, you know, if you fly Southwest, because bags fly free, I will take my Bogner head with me, because I wrap it up in a suitcase and I take it with me. If not, you know, in our rider, they give Zito and I both 800s, and I like, you know, I try to like to have the real ones from the 80s, but, you know, the reissues are fine. But yeah, they just give us Marshall 800s, and we take our little pedal boards with us that, like John was saying, have, you know, wah-wah pedal and a kicker and, you know, a couple other little things on it. And that's pretty much what we use. And we bring our Les Paul and our National and Flying V or whatever it is, and we go for it.
Yeah. Well, that's super cool, man. I'm hoping you guys get to Texas at some point with this band. It'd be great to see you guys.
We have been to Texas a couple of times. We were right outside of Houston a while ago. We did this thing called Gator Fest, which was great. But I didn't realize this until after we were gone. Thank God. But I saw the pictures later, and right behind the stage was like this big pond. And they were pulling gators out of this thing, man. I didn't know Gator Fest meant like they were actually hunting gators out of this pond, pulling them out while I was playing rock. But
you gotta try gator jerky. It's really good.
Gator jerky. I'll have to give it a try. Jersey, man. And we played in Dallas.
That's right.
We played Dallas too. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And we did Midland, Texas. Yeah, we did a couple of days, but I love Texas.
Yeah, me too. I used to live in Austin for a while myself too.
Ah, that's cool. That's cool. I'm actually coming to your neck of the woods in June. I'm going to be in Vegas.
Oh yeah, man, come on out.
Yeah, man.
You still doing that Kiss thing?
Yeah, the Kiss night. We moved it this year to it's October 7th. This is going to be our 6th one now, and we've already raised over $100,000 for the charity, which is like a Save the Music Foundation.
Right.
And yeah, man. I mean, that's the closest thing in my heart of anything that I do in this town. I mean, the Kiss night is grows bigger every year, gets more popular every year, and. And we're doing it again this year. Like I said, it's going to be the 6th one, and we have a featured album every year. This year, it's Creatures of the Night.
Cool.
And it goes back to Kiss, to where, you know, the reason Zito and I are sitting here, it was, you know, Kiss, and that's like the first rock music and guitar driven music that I heard, and you know, it's like, you know, that's what kind of got me started. Of like. I wanted it. I no longer want to be an astronaut or a fireman or anything else. I want to play the guitar.
Same here. When I was 13, 12, whatever it was, when I seen them, after seeing Ace Frehley, that was it. I was sold. That's it. Yeah. I know what I want to do.
Yeah.
Now that's it.
Yeah.
I grew up there, you know, watching the Kings of hockey and everything else. It was a whole other beast that I never seen anything like.
Yeah, and then it progressed. You know, it started with Kiss, and then...
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, then you discover... You know, Pink Floyd and Zeppelin and Hendrix and
digging into what they were digging into.
Yeah, they got their influences. Yeah, and then I grew up in Chicago, so I was naturally around blues all the time. So you know, I got into B.B. King and Otis Rush and Sun Seals, and then you know, of course, and you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah,
Stevie Ray
Vaughan. Johnny Winter.
Johnny
House. I think Son House.
Yeah,
you're right, Stevie Ray, man.
Yeah, Stevie Ray, I think, was probably like the last one that like shook our world. Where we were like, oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. There aren't a lot of people that have come along since then. Maybe a couple that have come along since then that have really just kind of like, holy crap! Now what? Now what do we do?
Right. Yeah, it's Stevie Ray. Just kind of like, I mean, to me, I'm a huge Robin Trower fan as well. Stevie Ray just kind of embodied all of them. It's like he had, you know, he can play any of that stuff, and he just like threw it back in your face in this way of, you go, oh my god! It literally says something,
right?
Yeah. It was all about feel for him too. It was. I heard him once say that, you know, if he thought about what he was doing, he wouldn't play nearly as well. He said when he put his mind out of the playing and just played what he felt, it would flow much better. And I think that goes for most people.
That makes sense. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. Yeah.
I'm the same way too. Where if I'm, and it's the same thing as having a band that gels together, because I don't want to be up there thinking
And I don't want to be up there worrying about, okay, is the bass player or the drummer or whatever going to go to the next part, right? I mean, I know it's going to happen. So we're not up there thinking. We're just letting it flow, and you're jamming. And, Zito and I are both, I mean, we're field players.
Yeah.
We're not like the GIG guys that went to Berkeley that, know all the modes and this and that. We go by what we feel in our heart and, how our soul speaks,
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely evident in this record, too. I mean, it's your best effort. It really is.
Thank you very much. I agree with you on that. I mean, I really do love this album, and I wish and hope that people will check it out and give it a shot, because every song on that record tells you a story and has great music to it, great solos, great singing,
mm-hmm.
And again, it takes you on a journey, and it's almost like a journey through 70s rock, from hard rock to the kind of Americana, Bob Seger, the song "Find My Way Home." It just kind of has that Chevy Van,
yeah,
Bob Seger kind of American rock.
Absolutely, it is total American. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's great. And hey, guys, thanks so much for being on the show. I'm so glad that we finally get to chat and talk about this record.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mark. That's really great, man. Thank you.
Folks, go to count77.com for more information there. And you can get the new record. It's called Soul Transfusion. You can get it anywhere you download music. It's a great record. You want a cool record for the summer? You want a cool record to tool around in your car on? This is one of those records, man. You pop it in, and it makes you want to drive fast. So that's good. That's a good kind of record to me. Guys, we're going to sign off right here, but hold on one second, okay?
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks again. All right.
Check out Guitar Radio Show on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Instagram, and Tumblr, and of course, on guitarradioshow.com.